My name is Casey Shobe. I'm the rector of the church. It is my tremendous privilege to welcome you here. Especially delighted if you are a guest tonight, not necessarily a member of our church, but have chosen to come out and join us this evening for this opportunity to hear from our guest, Becca Stevens. Before I introduce her and give you just a bit of information about Becca's time tonight with us, a brief word. This evening we will spend time here in the church. She has some stories to tell and lots to share from her own life in the ministry of Thistle Farms. After our time here is concluded, you're invited to come out and gather with us in the Tower Cloister in the hallway, where Thistle Farms has an array of things for you to consider purchasing. And normally, you know, Jesus didn't really like the whole money changers thing, so normally we wouldn't like celebrate that. Except one of the most remarkable things about Thistle Farms is the way that they embrace the totality of the process of creating something for you to sell. From the moment it is made, farmed, handcrafted, until it reaches a table in a church in Dallas, Texas, Thistle Farms, and the vision behind it, focuses on making sure that people are treated decently, are paid fairly, and so you can purchase these knowing that it is going to support people around the world. So I hope that you will, well, I hope you'll shop till you drop tonight. So there is also a small reception gathered, so please don't hurry out. This is a wonderful opportunity for us to just enjoy time together as a community and also to celebrate Becca and her team who are with her. Tonight, we welcome Becca Stevens, author, speaker, social entrepreneur, and founder of Thistle Farms, which is like God's answer to the business model. They strive to be a sanctuary for healing for women survivors of abuse, addiction, trafficking, and prostitution in order to change a culture that still allows human beings to be bought and sold. In their mission statement, they say, "We believe that in the end, love is the strongest force for change in the world." Becca is the author of Snake Oil, The Art of Healing and Truth-Telling, as well as Letters from the Farm, A Simple Path for a Deeper Spiritual Life. Her candor, empathy, humor, and faith are what make her such a rare and precious gift to the church today, and why she is among the most sought-after speakers and presenters in this or any other denomination or church. But one of my favorite things about Becca is the way that she always travels with an entourage. Because she is no diva. She travels with the women who make Thistle Farms go. The women whose lives have been affected by the love and mercy and healing of God as shown to them by the community of Thistle Farms. Becca is the founder and leader and primary spokesperson, but it is their collective witness that is the most inspiring and compelling part of it all. And the window into the kingdom of God that I peek through whenever I am in their midst. So tonight we celebrate the tremendous blessing of welcoming Becca here to Transfiguration, as well as welcoming Donna, Tracy, and Susan. And we welcome you all. And I'm sure that even now the Holy Spirit is starting to whisper throughout this church with hope and inspiration, and most especially with love. Because as the women of Thistle Farms remind us again and again, God, love is God's means, and love is God's purpose, and love is God's hope for all things. We welcome you.
That is so nice. Thank you.
Absolutely. My privilege.
We are so grateful to be here. It is an honor and a privilege, and that may be the nicest introduction I ever got. Thank you very much. And thank you to Erin for all her amazing work to organize it and get it together. We got to share tea with some of you this afternoon, which was awesome. We did our tea ritual, and tonight we're going to tell a few stories, and we're going to talk about the transformation from brokenness into compassion for others, taking our brokenness and turning it into compassion, and the journey that has been taught me that lesson through Thistle Farms. This is a season to celebrate that transformation. It's the season of Epiphany in the church, where we start out with light, and we start out with an idea, and we start out with a hope. We start out with something inside us that enables us to see something or feel something we haven't before. And then it moves us into this state of prophecy. We get Jeremiah and we get Paul and these people proclaiming and Jesus proclaiming that it is time for us to love one another, and any prophecy without love is just a clanging cymbal. And then this Sunday we end the whole season with transfiguration. That somehow we have been transformed on this journey. It's a perfect season to talk about what the journey of Thistle Farms is. It really did start with an inkling and a hope within, and a few lights and a few ideas. Early on, my dad moved south, much to my mom's chagrin, from New York to start a church with five small kids. They moved to Nashville, Tennessee. He was killed by a drunk driver that same year. So my mom was left widowed with five kids. The guy that was the drunk driver worked for a big trucking company. And our lives really began to fall apart, really that day and then ongoing. And both for good and bad, the community was what was there for us and kept us going and kept us holding on. The bad part was that the guy that took over the church where my dad was began to sexually abuse me for several years, actually beginning at the church. And realizing how broken and how hard community can be when we decide to keep the secrets, when we decide to feel like it's more important to hold an institution together than to speak the truth. All of those things. So my mom, about 3 months after my dad died, they had a trial because he worked for a trucking company. And they go into the trial, and my mom sees the guy that hit my father. And she goes up to him and says to him, "I just want you to know we're going to be okay." She said when she looked at him, she felt all this compassion. And she felt like it was too much for him to probably bear, the idea that there was a widow with five kids and no money and all of those things. Years later, she says to me, "You know, I always wondered if you guys ever regretted me saying that before the trial started, because what happened was both teams got together and they settled the whole thing out of court and there was no trial. So there was a lot less money, a lot of all that stuff." And I told her that I felt like what she had done was give us the greatest inheritance we could have ever hoped for. She took that burden of forgiving. She took that burden of anything that would be resentment or anger or fear and took it on herself and let us be free. And she raised us like that. And that thought and that feeling and that desire, I think, was always a part of my life. No matter how bad it got or how lost I got or how wild I got. So, when I got ordained in the Episcopal Church, I knew I wanted to start a sanctuary for women. I do believe the line between priest and prostitute is very thin. And in some ways, while I do not know the story of all the women I serve at Magdalene, I definitely sometimes have more in common with the women that I serve on the streets than my fellow clergy. And I felt that especially a long time ago. So this idea was in me that if we had a sanctuary and we could be free of all the institutions and all the burdens that the women were carrying, and if we could literally treat people like we would want to be treated if we were coming off the streets or out from under a bridge or out of prison, do it exactly like you would want it done for you. Beautiful comforters. Plenty of space. don't pay anything, have a stipend, have access to trauma care and the Rape and Sexual Abuse Center and a good therapist. Have a place so that if you have ideas about education, there's means to get scholarships, have match savings programs, all of those things. And so we decided to do it with five women. Five women came in, 1997, 2 years rent-free and no authority in the house. And you know this, and many of you probably share this story of the universal issues of sexual violence and how it's born on your individual body. And that one of the big triggers for us in our story of healing is authority. And somebody telling you, you can't do something, you better not do something. It's like, then I definitely will do that. Whatever you just said, I am now interested in doing it. So, no authority in the house. It doesn't mean there's not a lot of rules, not a lot of structure. But everybody was there to serve the women, and the only women in the house were the residents. And everybody stayed. Everybody. So we opened up another house and another house, and pretty soon we're moving from this sense of epiphany into this place of prophecy of speaking love. Not prophecy like we can predict the future, but the prophecy of speaking love into the present. The truth of love into the present world, and that we became more and more hopeful, and we built more houses. But when the women were still poor, we started with a bath and body care company, something about the body that was grounding and healing and made with beautiful essential oils that would be about all of creation and its healing for us. And we called it Thistle Farms primarily because it sounded good. It just, that's a good name, right? My husband's a country music writer, so it's all about the hook. And also because the thistles were the last flower that were growing where the women were walking and sleeping and turning tricks all around the prison and the chain link fences, you could see the thistles growing. So we named it Thistle Farms for that reason. We don't have a farm with thistles on it. I know, right? You can go anywhere to farm thistle, by the way. You don't need your own farm. One of the things we learned about 8 years into it when we were really starting to make paper products out of thistle and use the thistle is that thistle is really healing for women in trauma. If you went to the Walgreens, you could get thistle extract. And it's about healing your liver. And you think about all the drug abuse and all the stuff that the women have gone through. It's about regulating all your systems back after trauma. And there we were, drawn to the very weed in this world that heals us. And once I figured that out, and once we really started harvesting thistle, I would look everywhere for thistle, dead of winter, anywhere I was. And that's when the real epiphany hit. My God, I've become a thistle farmer. Can you imagine anything lower in the ecclesiastical hierarchy of the church than to be a 45-year-old woman standing in a field going, oh my Lord, I'm a thistle farmer. And I remember the day I thought of it. I remember when I finally realized what my life had become. That I was doing this work daily for years and years and I was actually becoming my work. I was becoming a farmer. And I stood out in the field and I wept, both for joy, for grief, for all of those things. And I thought about all those broken roads that had led me to get out there and all the communities and all the grace that had helped me not get too far afield. So then we started sharing the message. We started developing sister communities around the country and around the globe. And the transformation that I've seen within the community and the communities that we've become a part of has been awesome. When I read that story of the transfiguration that's coming up on Sunday and those guys hiking up a mountain and seeing something beautiful that they never imagined, completely believe it. I've seen so many things that are amazing, and there's all kinds of reasons you don't want to go up that mountain. You don't want to speak that word of love into the present world. You don't want to let those ideas come out in a beautiful, glorious way. Part of it is that many times we feel a little powerless. I mean, think about the issues, especially around human trafficking, the global statistics you hear with millions of people and billions of dollars in the industry, and you think, well, what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to engage that and help that? But over and over in the gospel stories, it is about loving the whole world, a person at a time, and engaging. And from where I stand now, looking back 20 years at those five women that first came into the house, I see them as brave pioneers that have helped transform hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of lives. That if we don't start with a community that's grounded and committed to one another, that you can't imagine how the ripple effects will happen down the road. Second reason we don't always want to act on this prophetic place that we get into about speaking and acting out in love in our lives from those epiphanies that we have is because we're afraid. There's all kinds of stuff to be afraid of, right? Are all y'all Episcopalians? That why no one's speaking or breathing or anything? Is everybody in here Episcopalian? Just blink if you hear me. It's like, I'm needing a little bit back, just a tiny bit, just like, just a little tiny bit. Okay. You can say amen, but I didn't want to ask that much of you. Just like, good point. So I'm going to try that again. Because sometimes we feel afraid of speaking that truth. Yes, we do. And there's good reasons to. There's very good reasons to. People will think you're so idealistic. Like, you're talking about love. That's crazy. You're not biblical enough. You're too biblical. I have gone to conferences, and I promise you, I'm either too Christian or not Christian enough for every single person in the room. And we do that to each other all the time. We judge people from where we are, and if they're close enough and we can make some connection, then we feel good. We skip right over love your enemies. I can love other people's enemies. Mine are a different story. But we worry about judgment. When we were into the program several years, there was a woman who I loved named Peggy Sue. She had been a baker. She had had a horrible childhood. She shared the story and the statistics of the women that come into the community of Thistle Farms. She, you know, raped between the ages of 7 and 11, hit the streets between 14 and 16 years old, dysfunction in your family, develop massive PTSD and addictions, all of that stuff that comes on its heels, great long prison record, life under the bridge, all of those things that you can imagine. And when I met her the last time, she weighed 85 pounds. She was in state custody with a feeding tube in her and a chain on her wrist, and she was dying. We have relapses. It happens. It's part of the journey. And when it happens, it is scary. When you die in state custody, what we got was a box of ashes, a cardboard box. And there was about six of us that gathered to do her service. And in my whole journey as a priest, I can tell you that was probably the most fearful I was. I just felt like maybe we should have done something different. Like if we had been better community or better equipped. I felt like it's just so horrible sometimes. The injustices and the cruelty out there and what people do to each other and how big it is that I was ill-equipped for it. I felt like people were going to say, see, women don't change. She was just using y'all. It didn't ever work. So, we started the service. One of us said, we'll start with, you know, a prayer, then we'll do a song, then somebody say something nice, we'll do the committal, and that'll be it. And I started off and I said, the Lord be with you. And of those gathered in the circle with me, nobody could speak back. We were all weeping. Love was so thick in that space, you couldn't cut it with words. Couldn't cut it with words. I will do this work my whole life. I will die doing this work. Gratefully. Because beyond that fear, beyond all that brokenness, beyond all those injustices, I felt love that thick and that powerful. And if love can speak beyond all of that into something deeper, I want to go there. I want to be a part of that. So we can lay those fears aside. They have nothing over us. Nothing. We don't have to be afraid of change. We don't have to be afraid of mistakes. We don't have to be afraid of judgment. We don't have to be afraid of our inadequacies. We can rest assured that love will lead us and carry us to a deeper place. So beyond powerlessness, beyond fear, I think the worst reason that people don't take those moments of epiphany and prophecy and hope towards transformation is because we're cynical and we're numb. Oh my Lord, I can get numb from it. I can get cynical about anything almost. But you've seen it in people. It's like, I've heard it all. There's nothing new under the sun. It's not interesting. And every single story is interesting, and every single person is interesting and carries a sacred story. And when we get bored and cynical or think we know it all, it is over on the spiritual journey. It's over. Until we come back to a place that is both courageous and humble to remember, we are always students on that journey. We're always needing new enlightenment, new actions, new hope to climb another mountain, to be transformed again. The call for us is to love the world. It's not to have the world love us. It's not to change the world. It's to love it, which means we get to keep changing so we can love it better. So when we get past all of that stuff, for us at Thistle Farms, when we get past all of it, we found that we were much more powerful than we thought. That we were growing into a voice and a community. And I am just a small part of it. If you came to our community in Nashville where we have 6 houses, a manufacturing facility, sewing studio, paper studio, education center, and cafe, you would see how little I do. And that I get to still be a part of it. But this idea that a growing community voice and a growing community vision takes on its own life, it's much bigger than any one person. When we started out at Thistle Farms, I really did think it was my idea. And I was like, oh my gosh, let's name all our products after biblical characters. That will be so much fun. So we made a candle and we called it the Flame of Penuel. Thank you, Tracy. We made the lip balm, Moses lip balm, No More Desert Lips. We had Hannah's Laughter lotion, and my all-time favorite was the bath salts called Lot's Wife. And so the company was growing, and this marketing team came in, and the very first thing they said is, these names are horrible. Whoever thought of this, you know, should be let go immediately. And I was like, I agree. And they said the most important thing is that it's made by the women and what that does for the women, that it's healing and for the women. So they took everything off. So now our candle is called soy candle. And our body balm is called body balm. And our, you know, it's named, that's just the name of the product. And it's Love Heals, made by the women, made by the women of Thistle Farms. And at that point, and from then on, I realized, and like all of us need to on this journey, that we get to be just a part of something much bigger than ourselves. And that's a really great thing to know and a great way to be. The way we start in our community every day is a circle. Circle is a big thing. And if you're new and you ever come visit us, you'll hear us say, "Welcome to the circle," when it's your turn, as we go around. And we put a candle in the middle and we light the candle. And the candle represents, you know, we light this candle for the woman still on the streets. We light this candle for the woman finding her way home. We light this candle because one candle can cut a path through the darkest night. And we make the candles and we light the candles every day. So there was a woman named Ty who, shares the history of the women of Thistle Farms, spent most of her youth hiding from her stepfather until she ran away. And when other kids were trying to figure out what prom dress to wear, she was getting in and out of cars. She was beginning to run some drugs for her, I'm just going to say, abuser. Spent most of her 20s in and out of prison. She came to us and she got the honor of being the candle maker. It's a huge, great gift to be the candle maker. And when you come, I'm sure all of y'all are going to come. So when y'all come, you'll see. I mean, it's like, I'm not talking about like a little candle maker. I'm talking about like vats and making $100,000 worth of candles a year now. I mean, like, it's a big job. I'm not messing around. We're not messing around. She's going to the rape and sexual assault center. She was working on her childhood issues. She was making restitution with the whole community. And you got to know that Thistle Farms takes no state or federal funding. Everything we make is based on the idea of through gifts that we give back, all of us. For all the grace that we've known in our lives, we give back. And the same is true for the women who are coming through the program. And it's all a gift, and they give back. Ty's working all this. She has one pending charge. She's been there for about 14 months or so. And we go back in and there is this last charge and we go to testify. I went and testified on the stand. And this particular person who was sentencing her, or they were deciding whether or not to sentence her, I explained all that and how great she was doing and how it's not costing the state anything. And the state is going to save, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and she's going to contribute back to the community for all these years. And the guy that was talking to me on the stand said, "Now, I hate to quote scripture to a priest, but Caesar gets his due." And I said in my head, "Don't worry, you didn't quote scripture to a priest. You misquoted scripture to a priest, which is much worse." And they sentenced her to another 14 years. And so she left, and she went back to prison for 3.5 years. And on the day that she came back out, she walked back into Thistle Farms. What happened was about 3.5 years later, because of the advocacy work and because of the community behind her, they got her out in 3.5 years. She came back. She walked in the back room and she started pouring candles. It was as if she had held her breath for 3.5 years and waited to pick back up the wick and the wax and to start it again. And when I saw her, I just wept. I was like, "Ty, how are you doing this? How are you not so mad, or how have you not given up?" She said it was the first time she'd ever been to prison with a whole community behind her that kept loving her through those dark times. And she never gave up. And Ty is going through a really hard time right now, and I would love and covet your prayers for her. So where we are as a community is we have about 100 women on our waiting list. despite all the references and referrals we can make. We have about 700 women we serve through our outreach and through our advocacy work. We have 36 women, both in and outside prison, in our residency. And we have about 72 people that work at Thistle Farms. And we are just getting started. We have so far to go. And I would like to invite Tracy to come up and share a little bit about her story.
Hello, I just want to say thank y'all and for having us here. Like Becca said, I started using when I was 13. I slept with grown men, and so from 13 to 15, I got pregnant. I had abortions. I didn't go talk to my mom because I didn't have a mother and daughter relationship, and so. After that, I just went to the streets because of the shame and the guilt that I put on myself. I thought I was the bad person, not the man. So I told myself that I had never been raped. And I have. So from 15... I say to 25, I was off to the races. I dropped out of school when I was 17. I'm 45 now. I have three kids, four grandkids, and one is deceased. I lost my kids. My mom, she was a good mom. She taught me whatever she had. But I'm learning I cannot blame her for my actions. Some of every relationship I got in, it was abusive because my dad used to beat up on my mom. So that's what I thought love was. That's where I grew up seeing. But now, I say I used for, 15 years. At the age 35, that's when... I got some help. 2004, I had a murder charge, and it led me to take my ex-boyfriend's life. I got locked up for 3 days, and my daddy bombed me out. And then it's when I went into Magnum. I didn't know that it was a way out. I'd never been clean, never been to rehab's institution. So this is my first time around. And so when I went in, they gave me my assessment. They said, well, it's a 2-year program. And I'm like, okay. And but they loved me for who I was. And that's what it took for me. I couldn't go talk to my parents about the things that I did or the things that I was doing. I normally cry, but today I feel the love and the peace in this room because I have been numb for so long. Today I can feel. Today I can tell my story. I'm just one person. There's many women out there that are struggling. And it took me a long time to get here. I didn't know I had a problem. I didn't believe I had a problem. But I can say God is good. So I went into Magna and I stayed there. And I lost my dad since I've been here. I lost my grandbaby since I've been here. They paid for the funeral. They let my daughter come and stay at the house. I never felt so much love in my life. So now I'm able to love myself just a little and not beat myself up. But it get easier. So I had a murder charge, and it took me a long time just to face me, face the things that I have done. I have my kids back in my life. So the things I didn't get to do for my kids, I'm able to do today with my grandkids. Like show up for the PTA meetings. Just ask them, say, Nana, can you help me with the homework, even though I've been out of school for so long, and I'm so locked. Yeah, I can help. That's the transformation that this program has gave me. And I will never look back. So I suggest, I'm challenging everyone in here to buy a candle, buy soap. You light the candle, you pray for a woman off the street, you pray for a young guy off the street. You put the soap in your bathroom at work. Just spread the love. Because I'm just one face, one voice, speaking for 1,000 of women that only have this opportunity to get to travel places I never thought I would go. I'm going to get married in July. I just bought a house last year. And it took me, I feel like a woman today. Not because of the material things, because of what God has blessed me to do. He saved my life. So I'm just a testimony. Thanks.
Tracy was feeling a tiny bit shy. I love that. What she's not telling you, so she has been with the community for 14 years. And she is one of the manufacturing directors, and she trains new women who are coming in about how to manufacture all the products. She had her hand in every product out there that has been made. She has done a remarkable job offering back the gifts in this beautifully, powerfully transformative way. And when Tracy says that she was in a conflict that led her to shoot someone, she's not saying that she was shot and it's a miracle that she's here. It was violent. It was horrible. It was a long time ago. But just that you are here is a testimony of just how when all of us have known and been spared sometimes in our life, just the gratitude that can last a lifetime for people. So, in this community of Thistle Farms, where we're going out into the world, what happens and what I've learned is that it's not just transformative for the small community, it's transformative for a whole community. It's why, like, the New York Times or NPR wants to do stories on it and wants to talk about it and wants to bring the good news out there. If we were a church doing an outreach program and we had tried to keep controlling it, none of that would have ever happened. But because we're out in the world and loving it and testing and saying, you know, all these ideals we have about love, what's it worth in the real market? What will the market bear for love? How will we make ourselves worthy of that? So we started out as a small community at St. Augustine's Chapel on the Vanderbilt campus. I took the job in part because there was a half a dozen people when I showed up the first Sunday morning, and I was like, this is a full-time job? I'm definitely called to this ministry. I could take everybody out to lunch and work 6 hours a week. Yeah, totally in. Part of my nature is laziness, just a little bit. But it was enough people to start doing the work. It was just a bunch of folks who really have one foot in and one foot out of the institution and were hanging by a thread, but were interested in trying this model. The ministry has thrived on the Vanderbilt campus because of it. You know, the Episcopal Church is taking the lead nationally. Let me say that again. The Episcopal Church is taking the lead nationally in housing for survivors. All this talk about human trafficking, all this education, all this programming, it's awesome. All this awareness, thank God. but to house folks and have a place and say, this is a sanctuary for healing. That is what we need in this country around trafficking, is safe places for young women to go to have all the resources necessary, that look at it in small communities, not as a national problem that we can never touch, and simply passing legislation, which we need to do too. One of the most, I guess, my favorite story this year recently of what that looks like, from going from this idea of an epiphany or maybe an idea something could be different to action and prophecy to transformation, is from, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago, we were in Michigan. And a young woman who came to us from Indiana, she had hitchhiked with a trucker at the age of 13, running from a very abusive situation. And some of the women really do call themselves throwaways, not runaways, because nobody bothers to call and say, you know, my daughter's missing. So you're just out there. She spent the next 25 years out there, mostly in prison and then back to the streets, back and forth. She comes in and she almost completes her 2 years, and she's ready to do exactly what Tracy did, which is be able to share that story, to transform from brokenness into compassion and see it as a ministry, and believing that in the sharing of that story, there is healing for all of us, the teller and the receiver. Lori was on her first trip, and she said to me on the way there, you know, I've never stayed in a hotel where I didn't have to do something. We get there to Michigan. Everybody checks in. We all go to bed. A little bit later, there's a knock on my door. And she says, Lori, can I come in? And I was thinking, you know, she's afraid because, you know, this is a new experience and we need to be watching people's recovery and caring for them. I'm like, absolutely, come on in. She came in the room and she said, you're not going to believe what just happened. I was like, what? She said, I went to get ready to go to bed, and I went in the bathroom to brush my teeth, and I looked in the mirror, and I saw something beautiful. That's transformative. It's hard to get there for all of us sometimes, right? But to get a glimpse of that, that we are on that mountain and we are beloved and beautiful and we have a right to stand with the prophets and the saints as we speak love and as we embody it and as we radiate it into this world. So where we are and what we're planning is we're now thinking that we need to have much more of a national market. We're in about 480 stores. But to do the work that we want to do, to foster new survivor groups, to mentor those groups, to help train them in social enterprise, to help facilitate a national network of housing, to do all of that, it's going to take all of us. And I don't want you, first of all, to worry about belittling, like, sure, she's going to end this with buy a product. That's buying into the movement, by the way. I don't get a commission. I don't get a salary from Thistle Farms. I will not make any money off this pitch. I believe it. I believe that when you have the products, when you share the story, it really changes lives. We get interns from professors who have put those products on their desk, and a student comes in and learns about it. In bathrooms from restaurants, we get referrals and people buying into it and learning the story and being a part of it. You can also be a social media advocate. That's huge. To share our story, to tweet about us, to put us on Facebook, we love it. It helps. It also helps make us a more powerful voice in this country, which we desperately need to do. You can help support the local efforts here. We've had the whole police force from Dallas, Texas, come to Nashville, Tennessee to sit in our circle, to learn about how to interact with women who are on the streets that they're encountering. Police can be as violent as anybody else and as healing as anybody else. Nothing happens magically when you put on a badge in that way. We've had the best police force support in Nashville, Tennessee. It is unbelievable. The police chief for years, before he became the police chief in New Orleans, whenever he got an honorarium, he would give it to us. Any fundraiser we had, he had two tables of police officer in uniform come and sit and be present and saying, we are for the women coming off the streets, and we recognize that the vast, vast, vast majority of women were victims long before they were criminalized. That's a huge thing to get involved locally. And the last thing is probably the hardest. If there's anything I've said tonight that sits in here, that made it down from here, anything, a thought, a moment, I invite you to let it grow, to let it see where it leads you, to be daring enough to speak it out loud to a friend, to see if there's a space in this church for it. You know, they say that, what is it, how many Episcopalians does it take to change a light bulb? None, they never change. And the way I really have heard it is that we don't mind changing a light bulb, but we want to be careful. We have to know the cost of the light bulb and look at all the different light bulbs. And then we may need to take it to committee. And then it's probably going to be an expensive light bulb if it's the kind that's worthy of being hung in the church, right? So it's going to have budget implications. So now it's got to go to finance. Then we can't let just anybody change it. We have to have an election. And that only happens in January. So we'll wait a year. And muses don't hang around that long. They will go find another home. So whatever that idea is, don't wait that long. Don't take it to committee where the spirit goes to die half the time. Let it grow and find a place where it blossoms and flourishes. I started out and I was talking about forgiveness as the means from transforming brokenness into compassion for others. It would not do the church any harm, and I don't mean your church, I mean the church, to remember that we need a lot more compassion. That a church without beggars and prostitutes and broken folks is just a museum. You've seen them all over. We are a gift to the church when we show up as the beggars, begging for a bite of bread and a sip of wine to remember our holiness and to catch something beautiful in the mirror. To be hopeful enough to light a silly candle and say a prayer and believe that it can save a woman's life. Let that sit with you, let it grow, and watch the transformation that continues in all of us. Thank you. So we are going to answer any questions you have not in here. They're trying to save this audio, I think, for podcasts. And so we will be at the table, and there's desserts and coffees. And between Donna, Tracy, Susan, and I, we can answer any questions you have. We have information, we have books, and we have everything that you might need, okay? And also we have a mailing list sign up, and we don't send out anything but about once a month. And it's just to let you know what holidays are coming up in case you've forgotten. But it will also give you information about the education and training opportunities. It will continue to share a story or two and update you about where we're headed. And we would love, love for you to do that. All right, thanks.
You were wonderful.